Hello, my name is Rich Wiggins. Welcome to our program on community networking. In the next half hour, we're going to learn what it takes to build a community information network using internet technologies. We'll hear from a number of experts, people who have studied community networking, as well as people who have built community information networks. When you think of the word community, you may think of many things: parks and recreation, city government and services, local sports teams, festivals and fairs, your own neighborhood, local schools, local history, and much more. Or to you, community might mean parking fines and property taxes. Whatever your vision, all of us seek information about our communities. Traditionally, we've learned about what's going on in our communities in a wide variety of ways: newspapers, neighborhood newsletters, radio and television, word of mouth, or public libraries. Increasingly, we obtain community information through online services. A community information network can offer any or all of the following components: access, ways to connect to the online service for those who lack their own computers and modems; information, the documents, calendars, directories, and databases that people seek; communication, ways for citizens to communicate with government, with service providers, and with each other about community affairs; and finally, commerce, conducting community business online. When you launch your community information network, you'll need to choose which of these four cornerstones your project will encompass. Early projects in community information networking have built on various combinations of these cornerstones. Over the past few decades, public libraries have engaged in a number of pioneering community information projects, and more recently, in online community information networks. For instance, the Detroit Public Library's TIP database provided information and referral services to citizens and community groups. Steve Sisler, a national expert in community networking, explains.
Well, I'd say one of the main things is that libraries, if they're involved in community networks, it's one of the best ways to reach out in the into the community, that, and especially in this digital age. You can certainly do that through other sorts of programs, but I think this is one that some people don't expect libraries to get involved in. But I've seen it's really had a large impact ever since I got involved in it about 1986. And what was magic for me is that the library was sort of the focal point for all these groups getting together and talking about what they wanted to do with the technology. So in a sense, it was community building. At the same time, it was making use of the technology.
Initially, the first generation of community networks, community information systems, were run out of the back pockets of techies, computer nerds, who had a computer with an awful lot of space for those days back in the 80s. So in the 80s with the freenets, a lot of those were initially run out of somebody's back pocket.
The mission of a freenet is to provide internet access to a community at a very low cost, looking at the broadest base of community to include both people that can afford access and those that can't, and also to put content online about the local community. The Genesee Freenet went live with a computer system and dial-in access for the community, offered free web pages for nonprofit organizations, offered free training for the community on what the internet is all about.
Increasingly, what we find is it has to be a collaborative effort. And who takes the lead really depends on who's in the community. It's more reasonable to have people who take the lead be providers of information anyway. And this is just an additional provision. So often in communities you'll have the public libraries, the public schools, community college, Chamber of Commerce. We tend to think now about electronic information. And electronic information has allowed us to do a lot of things in community information that we couldn't do before. Many people in some communities don't have access to their own computers. And if they have access to a computer, they may not have access to a modem. Back in 1994, public libraries, only 17% of public libraries provided public access to computers. 4 years later, we find that well over 60% of libraries provide public access. Community information is increasingly also meaning community communication, so that not only are you providing information about something, but you are increasing the communication.
Something new has come on the horizon that will provide an opportunity, rather, for libraries to enter into a different kind of relationship with their community, one that we've never had before, because it will provide us with a vehicle to go right into the heart of the community and to work with people on matters about which they are most concerned. See, we can give everybody in the world all the information that they want about the art in Russia, but we are not able to adequately support community-based organizations in their work to revitalize their communities, because we're not used to handling that kind of information as the most important stuff that we have. And now what we're finding is a lot of this new kind of information, if you will, is available on the internet. And by helping people to use access to the internet and websites and become familiar with the new technology, we can begin to provide a different kind of assistance to neighborhood groups and community-based organizations.
The World Wide Web provides a unique opportunity for libraries to become publishers instead of being the sort of passive pass-through organizations we've been in the past. We can take the information that's been available in many scattered forms, in card files, on little sheets that we keep tucked next to the reference desk or the children's services desk, and bring that information together so it can be used not only within the library, but by people all over the world as they tie in to the web with their own computers.
The technology is becoming easier if you have a computer, a modem, you can become a publisher.
In a sense, public libraries have been in the business of community information for many years, anticipating the right technology for delivering information online. With the World Wide Web, community networks can now rely on the same web publishing technologies used by large corporations, by government, and by individual people. The web offers common tools and a global infrastructure accessible to every community, large and small. The important thing is access to information. That should be the bottom line that drives any decisions. It's not necessary for the individual library to have the fanciest server, the fastest server. The important thing is to work with the technological resources that are available on the local level and in the regional and statewide level. It may be that the most logical way for your community to proceed is to work with your public library cooperative, or to work with Merit, or to work with one of the other academic institutions in the community.
I remember in Flint, working with the youth coordinator there. This was a project that was made possible by our computers, but it was developed by Cynthia Stilley.
So we had a wonderful project last year. It was called WebLinks. We hired 10 teams to go out into the community, find social service agencies that needed a homepage, and then they built the homepage for the agency. They went out and found particularly agencies that delivered services to teens. And then they built the homepages for them, took all their information, organized it, put it into a template that we had already built. And then they we had a big reception and invited all the agencies and their directors and the kids' moms and dads and teachers to see their work. And you can see it right now. It's still on our homepage. Many of those agencies out there didn't even know what a home page was, nor did they know why they should have one. And so our teams taught them what was a home page, and then they made links out into the World Wide Web to show how, for instance, Red Cross could have their own web page here, and it could be linked right into the national home page. And so the teens were really teaching the agencies what it was, what is the internet, and how they could use it. The teens felt they were so cool because they knew something that the adults in the community didn't know anything about. They not only knew about it, but they could do a service that cost a lot of money if the agencies had gone out to get a private agency to do it. So some of them were thinking that they, if they could just get a computer, they would start their own jobs. All 10 of them went on to college. And that wasn't what was going to happen when they came, because these 10 kids were chosen because they had low computer skills. They didn't know very much about computers. And 60% of them were female, because we know that girls spend less time in the computer labs in the high schools. So they really, really showed that they could do an excellent job.
I see probably the library's role in bringing together the other groups. For instance, in rural Montana, there's a small library that's been the focal point for all the community network organizing. But what's been crucial is that all the groups in the community have come together with the library as sort of a catalyst. I think perhaps the best tactic is that of the library populating the website, or if it's a community network site, with information that they've helped put up locally, whether it's historical, genealogical, or they've just been the catalyst to get other groups to come in and put up information. To me, that's where libraries can really add value, especially if the information is not seen as having commercial value.
And then the next year, we started a project with Chico from U of M called the Flint Timeline Project. And this is really an exciting project because it involves the whole community. It's a digital chronology of Flint, and we have gone to schools. This is where we started. We've gone to schools and asked if they would like to have as one of their products to document some historical aspects of Flint. So, for instance, here in the cultural center where we're sitting right now, one class documented each building, took a picture of it, and wrote a little something about it and how it came to be. And if it was named after a famous person in Flint, like DeWaters or Whiting, they wrote a little something about that person. And then we put it in the timeline according to the year that the building was built. Another part of that was automotive history update. And this was another grant that came through the Community Foundation. And we hired 4 students, 2 boys and 2 girls. Again, they were from disadvantaged homes. And they went through our biography of automotive history here in Flint and did home pages on all the famous people who brought Flint from the carriage, the center of the carriage producing world, to the center of the automobile industry. One of our students, she said, well, you know, my grandmother and grandfather were living here in Flint and during the sit-down strike, and could I put a picture of them up on the timeline? I said, for heaven's sake, this is perfect. So she brought a picture of them, just a small one, of when they got married. And then she brought a little picture of her grandmother when she was a baby and her grandfather with their first child. And so she wrote about them, how they lived here, and what they were doing during the sit-down strike. And she found that information out by talking to them, by interviewing them. And then she made a little web page and said 1906. And so we're going out into the community, and now we're asking people, do you have a relative that was here in Flint that you would like to have on our timeline? We're going to the genealogical societies, we're going to church groups and community groups who remember Flint many, many years ago when they first came. It's getting, our timeline is going to be really rich with information about famous people and not so famous people, but people who really made Flint the place that it is.
When you worked in communities like ours, where resources are very tight, and the distribution of the community's resources is a sincerely important matter, and they decide that you deserve, as an institution, some of their dollars. And what are you going to do for it? What do you give them back for their investment in you?
If community networks are to continue, then what we have to do is to do a much better job of identifying those stories, those exciting anecdotes.
It's important for you to define the scope of your community information network. The scope might be very broad. You may want to build a comprehensive community information portal for residents of your community. Or your scope might be more narrow, such as a historical timeline. You also need to define the audience of your project. Who will come to your site? What information will they seek? Once you've defined the scope and the audience, you're ready to carefully design a site that achieves its goals effectively.
If a community information system is important, if it's really maybe the one major outlet for information, means of communication for an organization. You know, maybe only a 15-page site, but it should still be well architected, because that might be the main face on the world for that organization. There's three things that people tend to come to a site that they have on their mind when they come to a site. They say, I have a task to do, or I'm interested in a certain topic, or I'm part of a certain audience that needs certain kinds of information. They come with questions, and a good organization scheme and figures out which of those three, maybe the combination, are the important ways to organize the information in the site, by topic, by task, by audience. Once you've kind of gone through that process and anticipated the questions that people are going to commonly have when they visit your site, then it's also good to think about little things like a really brief sentence or two that say what the site is, what it's for, or maybe who it's for. It doesn't have to be a novel or anything. Often that can and probably should be sayable in a couple sentences. And putting that right in a fairly prominent place on the main page of the site is a really good way to do that.
In addition to providing users with content areas when they first arrive to your website, it's always very useful to provide a much lengthier index that may be organized alphabetically or may be organized on a broader subject orientation. You may provide a search engine, which means that they can plug in keywords in different combinations to find the exact content they're interested in. The opening layout of web page is not always going to be the means by which somebody wants to find information at your website. So you should provide other means, and those other means can come in the form of an index or a search engine.
So it takes some careful design work to build it. Another important consideration is how to coordinate your effort with those of others. Increasingly, communities will find that a variety of commercial, government, and nonprofit efforts are already publishing community information on the web. How can your new project mesh with these existing efforts?
I think the role that a library can play in a community that already has an active local information matrix in place is to work to make that better known. The library tends to be seen as the honest broker in the community. There's no particular debts owed to any specific institution, commercial operation, or governmental entity within the community. The library can be seen as the aggregator of information as well as the aggregator of demand, to bring this all together in a way that people know is non-commercial, non-partisan, and has no allegiance to any specific institution. So I think that's an important role that the library can play. The other thing is the library has to make a very careful assessment of what's already in the community, so not to duplicate efforts. We don't have time or money to do that. And I think it's very important for the library to give local information, know what's already out there before they jump in with both feet.
We were working on getting our web page up and running. We started saying, we've done the access piece, now it's time for us to do content. Now it's time for us to make sure that people within our community have access to all the good information that we have. The courts were working in that same direction. They were working on content. And they had money that was coming to them from a granting source to buy equipment, and we had the telecommunications piece of it. So the court administrator came to me and he said, what's the possibilities that we could work together? And I said, that'd be a really nice project to do, but you know, there's this other thing that I've been wanting to do for a while, a community information page of some sort. And I said, this will work great for both of us because we're both going to do a lot of work to design our websites and get them up and running, but how are people going to find them? You know, how are we going to market these websites? If we have a community page and everybody in the community who's doing the same thing that we're doing, they're getting their information on the web so that the local people can see it. If they can go to one page where they know they can find out everything they need to know about the community, that will make it easier for them to find your information and my information and all the rest of the information in the community. And he was sold on the idea, and I have my partner.
What we've seen in the last few years is that ownership of the information is not as important as access to it. In the same way, ownership of the server isn't as important as making sure that people can find the information they need. And so it may be that you run a small site on somebody's larger server, maybe that you run a large site in coordination with a number of other institutions, or it may be that you actually do run the server. But the important thing is only that the access to the information is there.
Information, or content, one of our four cornerstones, will by definition be a key part of your project. Access may be part of your project, or it may be provided by existing community access efforts. You must choose whether to embrace communication and commerce in your new project. It's a good idea to start small. For instance, you can provide citizens with ways to communicate with government officials by simply publishing a directory, including their email addresses. You need not create an elaborate online discussion environment in the beginning. Once you've chosen which cornerstones to embrace, it's time to define the scope of your project and your target audience. Next, you need to make choices as to appropriate internet technologies. Then, you'll want to identify partners and find funding. And next, you'll want to mobilize information or content providers from the community and offer them any needed training. Let's learn from the example of the Flint Public Library.
Flint has continued the activity, and what we did was to provide them with internet access. We provided them with computers, but it was a collaborative effort because we worked with the co-op, we worked with the public library, we worked with funders like Kellogg and Apple. Flint has hired two librarians, and the second librarian came on. It's actually been three librarians, and the last one came on in September.
I tell people it's sort of like a librarian in cyberspace. I don't know, that at least elicits a chuckle from them. I'm not sure that most people really understand what that means anyway, but it at least gives me an entree to be able to talk about the internet training that we do here at the library. We have a 17-seat internet training lab where we can bring groups of people in to do training or to work on web pages and that sort of thing. Right now, the main training that we're doing is an introduction to the internet class. It's just a two-hour introduction, about an hour of lecture, an hour of hands-on practice by the people. And so we give that at least four times a month. We get people who don't own a home computer, have just heard about the internet on television over and over and over again, and can't help but open a magazine and see an ad from a vendor that gives a web address. We get a lot of people who have just bought their first computer and know that they can have internet access. The icons are right there on the desktop for them to open up, but they really don't know how to proceed, nor do they know what they will find once they get onto the internet. So they're just really interested in learning about it. Well, I don't think they're at the stage where they would even think that they could publish information on it. They really, they want to become involved in it. They really don't know what that means. I think they think first of getting information, much in the same way as you get information from your television set. But then I think they discover email real quickly. They discover chat. And those two applications, I think, really draw them into the realization that the internet is a community, that they can actually communicate with other people using this medium, which is different than any other medium they've ever used in their lives.
The Library of Michigan Community Information Toolkit provides tools for you to begin your community networking effort. There are many resources other than the toolkit you can use to learn more about web publishing in general and community networking in particular. You'll find a wealth of information about website development on the web itself. The Michigan Electronic Library, MEL, is also a great resource and a great place to find other community networking sites in Michigan. Another resource on community networking is offered by the University of Michigan.
At the University of Michigan, we maintain the Community Connector website. And the Community Connector website is designed to help people who are starting community information systems to get an idea of the kinds of information that is available. So that on that website, we provide best practices, We provide examples, and it can be housing, economic development, transportation, calendars, what local governments are able to bring to the table, what libraries are able to bring to the tables, museums, recreational programs, and what the Community Connector does is to answer a real need. Right now, people don't know what is community information, what's appropriate for my community to put up. These kinds of things are ongoing, and I would never say that something was a success or it wasn't a success, because we aren't yet, I can't point to any city in the nation and say, here is a place where there is a fantastically successful community network. We aren't there yet. You still, if they are successful, it's going to have to be used by the public.
We've seen examples of community networking projects that address three of our four cornerstones: access, information, and communication. Now let's discuss our fourth cornerstone, commerce. In coming years, electronic commerce will be an accepted part of everyday business. We'll expect e-commerce also as a part of community life. Paying parking tickets, checking property tax records, applying for building permits, even renewing books at the local library. These will be commonplace online activities. Whether you pick one cornerstone or all four, whether the scope of your content is broad or narrow, the important thing is to get started. So good luck with your community information networking project, and we'll see you on the net.